Our rain is back. Thunder, too. Well, they said there might be thunderstorms. And that's me. And these are for you. Now, where did we stop
last
week?
The dog bit off the cat's leg.
That's right.
And the two mice used the grass stuff.
That's right.
To tickle the cat's paw until the dog could come and chomp down on it. Chomp! Yow! And something bad was just about to happen when my bus came. What was it?
Your bus?
No, Grandpa. What was going to happen?
Well, that's what we're about to find out. Well, now, let me see. Today we are beginning book two of The Mouse Made of Dough.
Why book two? Is the first one over?
Well, I guess mainly because some time has gone by. It was winter and Christmas. Now it's all the way around through spring and summer and now into fall. Well, now, let me see. Yes. Some time has gone by since last we had contact with our favorite little mouse. Winter has turned to spring, then summer to fall, and Andy has moved up in the world. And if you care to see where he's gone, I'll show you. Follow me now, and let's step out from the church by the front stone steps. Go out in the yard, 10 or 11 paces, a few more. Now turn around and look up to the top of the tower. You remember those dragon downspouts I told you about? The gargoyles? Check out the one on the right. Check its mouth. That is to say, the hole at the end where the rain pours out. Look closely at its Chinese-style grimace, its rows of square dragon's teeth, all identical molars the size of chicken eggs. Note, too, the dragon has a white tongue sticking out, just showing its tip. Now, I'll give you a tip. That's not a tongue. That's our hero, Andy the Albino of St. Andrews by the Sea. From this unorthodox skybox, Andy has a view that defeats all rivals. It's what normally seagulls see. From his impressive downspout. From his impressive downspout lookout, Andy can keep a better watch for his parents while at the same time taking in the constantly shifting panoramic scene, like the one he's seeing now, the perfect sunset of a perfect fall day. Milkweed seeds and silver gossamers drift on the breathless air. Above, in the increasingly bottomless sky, robin's egg blue is still the predominant hue. But purple martin, too, is seeping up from the eastern horizon. To the south, the direction the dragon looks out, a rack of puffy white clouds are suspended in midair like a cotton ball abacus. Andy watches as it slowly transforms into a pink-rosed trellis. And the reason it's all happening is because the sun is digging its nest underground to the west of Nantucket Sound. A few sailboats out there are sailing around, but Andy's impressive view is higher than any of those crow's nests at sea. But that doesn't mean it translates emotionally. That is, Andy knows better than to think that because he's moved up in the world, he's also moved up in majesty. He's not a Yertle the Turtle. That's not how he plays it. King of all he surveys, just because he surveys it. But this is not to say that there is any doubt that Andy is quite proud of having scaled the tower himself. He remembers the night he tried it. In a daring and reckless mood, he simply turned right and followed through and kept going, tracing the polydent seam to the roof, winding back and forth between the boulders and not looking down until he reached the top. Once there, he turned around. That was when his jaw nearly dropped. The world was too big to comprehend. He had no idea it was this vast or wide. But did he feel glorified? No. He knew he was only a lowly mouse, and a freak at that. He had no illusions about being king, or that a commanding view necessarily commanded anything. Just as he knew, he wasn't the hero his grandfather pretended him to be. Andy was just Andy, much like we are we. To the left and below him, Andy looked down on the village of Safe Harbor, sloping to its gentle shore. From here he could see a corner store, a post office, not much more. Then, except for a few residential roofs poking through, mostly it was just an unbroken canopy of trees. Towering maples, mostly, tangled in their treetops, crowded in their crowns, and honey-colored in the distillate light, which from this height made them appear as stalks of broccoli marching in a can-can parade. Their muted colors were pumpkin, orange, and lemonade. A few older trees, too, prematurely bare. But the ones that stood out in the sharpest contrast were the ones in the gaudiest hues, standing off in ones and twos. Trick-or-treat trees, you might call them, dressed up like apples for Halloween. Macintosh red and yellow golden delicious, and down by its fringes, completing the scene, some stubborn shrubs, still dressed in Granny Smith green. Yep, just like that. That's a good one. Care for a bite yourself?
No, thanks. No, thank you, Grandpa.
All right. Nice and tart. This was the beautiful world that heretofore Andy had never seen, nor even known existed. How he wished his parents were here to share it with him, or that somehow he could get his grandfather up here to see personally. But he knew that was a possibility that could never be. Grandfather was not the same mouse since the accident. The tragedy had happened immediately following the title bout. You know the one I'm speaking about. Cat versus dog. Paws versus jaws. Jaws winning out. Grandfather had let out a big wahoo of joy and celebration and then launched the tickle grass off the cliff, and the two happy mice had watched it flutter to the ground the way a roll of toilet paper unfurls in a streamer when you're out TPing houses on Halloween.
What is that?
You don't know. Well, you'll grow into that later when you're older. One with soap and windows. Right now, you're still a trick-or-treater.
What is TP?
What is it? It's hijinks, that's all.
What are hijinks?
In this case, it's tossing rolls of toilet paper over tree limbs. Anyway, Grandfather Mouse, after tossing the grass off the cliff and watching it flutter down, joyously swooped up Andy in his arms, and they hugged and laughed and danced. And it was right about then that the fickle finger of fate stepped in, and in the midst of their happy celebration, a shadow passed over Grandfather's face, like the shadow of the stroke of an axe. And all of a sudden, one side of his face began to relax and droop like melting candle wax. Their laughter cut in half. Grandfather clumsily set his grandson down. He put a paw to his forehead and staggered around, looking dazed and confused and possibly dizzy. And though he was standing upright, he must have felt like he was toppling over backwards, because to compensate, he suddenly pitched forward in a pitch-ahead run, as though he's trying to get his legs under him. The effect of this directive was not at all corrective, for instead of righting himself, Grandfather Mouse launched himself, diving in a swan dive off the balcony, straight into space, and then, like those days when Superman's landlady forgets and washes his tights in kryptonite, Grandfather plummeted, more like a sandbag than Superman, like a lump. Not elegantly, not fluttering like the grass stem, not stylish or graceful or poetic or dapper. So it's not the image of a streamer we're after. Go back to that image of TPing the house. Now imagine it's with toilet paper still in the wrapper. That's how Grandfather fell.
Grandpa?
What?
How old do I have to be to TP?
High school. Yeah. When Andy scrambled down the wall to the ground to reach his grandfather, he found him alive, not too badly hurt from the fall, but still suffering the effects of whatever it was that had laid him low. He seemed barely able to see. He blinked and answered incoherently. His climbing back up the wall was out of the question, so Andy stooped and without hesitation hoisted his grandfather across his back, fireman style, then pleaded with him,
"Hold tight to me, Grandfather, tight as you can while I climb us back up. Hello, am I getting through?"
Grandfather nodded. Though stupefied, he seemed to understand what was being asked of him. Using his good paw to grip his bad, he made a loop and slipped it over Andy's head like a noose, which allowed him to hang off Andy's back somewhat like a papoose. He held on while Andy made the difficult climb back up to the balcony, then back through the chink, back inside the church, but looking first to see, no sign of the cat, no evidence at all, except the trail of red droplets leading off in little raised puddles on the floor that looked like melted sealing wax. Some had been stepped in by a paw and then tracked across the floor like red ink cancellation stamps on a letter. They trailed off until they disappeared altogether. Reaching the lair, Andy had quickly put his grandfather to bed, giving him his own, figuring it was nearer the lavatory and therefore easier for him to reach. Then he sought to make him comfortable on his mattress of Kleenex. Then, without giving it a second thought, he scooped up armfuls of shreds from his pile and spread it like confetti over his grandfather's body to help him conserve his body heat. And there he lay, and has stayed pretty much the same way right up to this day. He sleeps a lot. Now, as for the pirate cat, one word about that. After a recuperative hiatus, he returned to the church, having undergone a radical change in both form and personality. He still looked the pirate cat, but he was no longer a candidate for Captain Hook. Now he might be more easily mistook for a nautical captain out of a different book. I'm thinking of Ahab. Remember him? The one with the ivory peg for a leg, replacing the one bitten off by his nemesis, the great white whale, Moby Dick. Captain Ahab, the demented captain who is forever thumping and stumping back and forth across the quarterdeck, compulsively searching the seven seas, funded by a grant from the arts and huge manatees. I like that. Searching for his famous nemesis. Well, in a similar way, the nautical cat's front leg has been sacrificed and snatched away in his hunt for the great white mouse. The cat's artificial leg, however, is not made out of ivory. It is made out of wood, a former chopstick or drumstick, hard to say which. But walking or running, balking or punting, it makes an audible click with every step the cat takes. So that now, no matter which way the pirate cat chooses to go, whatever way his footsteps led, what had formerly been a silent tiptoeing becomes a noisy tap-toeing instead. You try. Not bad. All right, back to lunch. As such, the crutch functions much like the ticking clock in the belly of that famous croc we talked about. Oh, poor disabled cat. How could he ever again hope to stage another successful pounce and employ his ounces of cunning if everywhere he tried to go, his footsteps announced he was coming. Furthermore, the damaged cat realized that though he may have been born with 9 lives, he had only 3 limbs left to sacrifice, and another mishap like that would leave him walking around on stilts. That's right. Therefore, now the newly prudent pussycat lives off his pension, his vow never to venture his paw into any more holes without knowing in advance what is in them. Andy in the downspout is almost ready to call it a night. The sunlight from the west has all gone out as a wind from the east is rising, blowing its breath across the mouth of the open drain pipe, like across the spout of an earthenware jug. Producing a spooky, hollow, eerie-like moaning that's much like the sound of a mad cow lowing.
Can I try it?
Well, you can try. I doubt you've got the breath. It takes more wind power than you've got, Andy. Well, see, yeah, sometimes even I can't get it right. Meanwhile, the effect of such a sad and mournful sound seems to accentuate and magnify Andy's homesickness and makes it harder for him to stick around and maintain a brave face while keeping up this lonesome vigil. Tonight, Andy's spirits are especially low. It wasn't just that he missed his parents so. He did. Or that the situation in the church had grown worse. It had. Or that his and his grandfather's roles were reversed. They were. Andy now the guardian, Andy now the nurse. Although not that he resented for 1 minute having to do it. He didn't. It was just that now with grandfather sleeping so much of the time, they hardly got a chance to talk anymore. It left Andy feeling quite alone and abandoned, and often so forlorn, like tonight, that he really began to question, should he have ever been born? Andy looked down at the white fur covering his forearms and his pink paws. What kind of paws were these? They were not a mouse's. Such a cruel hoax to be forced to dress like a ghost your whole life. Andy sighed. What was it about the night that made these types of feelings arise? During the day, he seemed to get along okay. But what was it about night that multiplied one's insecurities and magnified one's fears and made one feel tiny and small and puny and of no consequence at all, as if the whole universe was ignoring you, or if not, taunting you like the cousins did, never passing up a chance to cruelly remind him of the freak he truly was. Born not right, born a fright. Andy looked at his breath in the pale moonlight and sighed. Even his breath came out albino. He guessed it was time to go down. Perhaps his grandfather would be awake and they could lie in the dark and make small talk. Even if he wasn't awake, Andy was going to try to wake him. He was feeling so distraught he almost wished for his cousin's return. Almost. But then again, not. Andy's manner of descending the tower had come about from a fortunate find he had made the night he made his first solo climb. That was the discovery of a poorly fitting trap door hatch that regulated the comings and goings of humans to the observation deck. By virtue of this ill-fitting hatch, Andy had discovered a large enough gap, just wide enough he could wiggle through. then dropped to the top step of the spiral staircase that revolved its way down, a descending merry-go-round that thus provided a safe, dry, and convenient way for him to descend. Climbing up by these same steps, were a mouse to attempt it, would have been nigh on impossible, entailing as it would 43 standing high jumps in a row. But going down was a different show. All he had to do was run along the edge of each step, and when he got to its end, drop to the one below, an almost silent drop, ending with a soft, furry plop, then hopping up and doing it again. So his coming down sounded like this. Over and over, non-stop, like taking 43 short elevators to the ground, making the method a far easier and safer way to descend the tower than trying to do it from the outside, boulder to boulder. Not to say that coming down this way was a cinch. Andy's legs were shaking by the time he reached the bottom. Emotionally, he was on shaky ground, too. He felt himself gripped by that notorious pair, hopelessness and despair. However, as he stepped off the final step, leaving the tower proper and entering the foyer of the church, he happened to look up and notice the embedded stained glass window up above, lit up by an outside flood. A floodlight.
Oh.
Andy had glanced at this window many times before, but somehow had never really examined it. It was small and arched, and in the center of its upper half was a sort of corral in the shape of an oval, and the floor of the corral was a mosaic of gemstone reds, the colors of pomegranates, the colors of rubies, all lit up and glowing like a bed of coals, ready for a fire-walking Sufi. In the middle of this corral stood a creature Andy had never really noticed before. What kind of creature it was, he didn't know. Not a mouse, for sure. It had four fairly long and slender legs, somewhat like a horse's, and a head like a donkey's, sort of, with its long ears laid back. Definitely not a cat. It was covered all over by curly hair, like in a perm, that ran in tight, regular rows, from the tip of its tail to the tip of its nose. But what mattered most to Andy, what absolutely mattered to him at this moment, was one central feature of this truly unusual creature. And that was this. Its fleece was white as snow.
A lamb.
You think so?
It's a lamb.
All of a sudden, Andy's heart let go. As the little mouse realized, it meant there must be another being out there that shared his affliction, another albino, thus reassuring him he wasn't alone, he wasn't a freak, he wasn't to blame, he wasn't the Hunchback of Notre Dame. This celebrated figure in the windowpane, whatever its name may be, was as snowily dressed as he. And let me tell you, this newly discovered discovery, this newfound sense of connection, melted the shackles round Andy's heart and planted a lump in his throat that caused his eyes to emote as the meaning sank in. I am not alone. Furthermore, the way the creature kept its chin up and its head back, not allowing itself to sink into a slough of despond, raised Andy's hopes and seemed to say to him, fear not, and usher with it the radical thought that he was really okay, just the way he was. Hot tears filled his eyes and turned them into brimming window panes that spilled their moisture down his mane and sniffled down his downspouts. Here comes your boss. All our rain is back. Listen, they're coming down.
Oh!
Andy, when your bus has been showing up lately, you haven't been that excited. Is that because you want to keep going with the story, or is there something else?
No, I don't think so.
I'll walk you out.